Coming up on KUCB News, tomorrow marks the one-year anniversary of an important event in Attu's recent history, and Unalaska's Heart of the Aleutians has been moved due to impending poor weather. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, August 16th, 2018. In 1942, there were 44 people living on Attu Island, nearly all Alaska Natives. But during World War II, they were invaded and taken as captives to Japan, where half of them died. Then the American government forbade the survivors from returning home. That finally changed last August when 11 descendants had the chance to visit their ancestral homeland for the very first time. KUCB's Zoe Sobel made the trip with them, and now, on the one-year anniversary of that voyage, we're sharing the story she brought back.
Almost no one gets to visit Attu Island. The only way to get there is by boat. It's a long journey. The island marks the westernmost point of the United States. And navigating the governmental red tape that regulates the island is a logistical nightmare. But in the middle of a busy summer field season, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made time to ferry Attu descendants back to their ancestral home. On the RV Tekla, the main hangout is the galley.
Crystal Dushkin from Atka and descendant of Attu as well. It was something, I think, like a lot of us, something I never ever expected to happen in my lifetime, to make it all the way there.
Crystal Dushkin is the mayor of Atka. She grew up steeped in Unungan culture. She's eager to see the old village site where her great-grandmother Mary Prokopieff grew up. Had World War II not happened, she could have grown up there. But in June of 1942, the Attuans' lives were changed forever when Japanese soldiers landed on the island and captured all 44 residents. They were taken to Japan and held as prisoners of war. Nearly half of them died, many from malnutrition and starvation. In the 75 years since, anthropologist Rachel Mason says the stories of Attu haven't been shared. She explained on a break at Kiska Island.
The descendants of those people never even had a chance to learn about the experience in Japan or about Attu Village. And their parents didn't want to talk about the traumatic experience.
After the war, the U.S. government didn't allow the Attuans to return home. Mason says it was considered too inconvenient. Many settled in Atka, but others never returned to the region. A handful went to an orphanage, and some ended up in the Pacific Northwest in hospitals. That includes Teresa Deal. Raised by two white parents in Washington State, she never really learned about her birth mother's life on Attu or her captivity in Japan. But she always got questions about her background.
They think I'm Polynesian. They think I'm Mexican. They think I'm all sorts of stuff. And then they tell them, no, I'm from the Aleutian Islands. And then you get the blank stare. And so they get a lesson in geography when they meet me.
Now, this is her first time in the Aleutians, her first time being close to the history of her mom's family.
I wish I even knew more about the culture so that I can tell my sons about the culture. My sons know that they're Aleut, but they know less than I do.
A stop in Atka gives Deal a glimpse of what her life could have been like had her mom, Marina Hodiakov, grown up there after the war. From the second Deal steps on shore, the western dialect of Unungam Tenu fills the air. A brief church service is held to bless the cross bound for Attu. And over at the school, she watches students perform traditional songs.
And it was really quite eye-opening to see how the love that they have of their culture. I wasn't immersed enough. I didn't get that. So I do wish that Marina had been relocated there, and then my life would have been different. Or not at all.
For the descendants, the days spent on the boat felt like a big family reunion. After 2 days of travel, it was time for the part of the trip everyone was anticipating.
We're here! We made it! We're getting ready to land on Attu! It's very exciting. If I could dance, I would totally dance right now.
The old Attu site lies in a protected cove encircled by lush green mountains. The grasses grow long and wild, interspersed with purple and yellow flowers. But there's no sign of the former village. As they take in the land, the descendants find the foundation of the old Russian Orthodox Church, plant the cross, and hold a ceremony to honor their ancestors and their lost community. From there, they gather grass for traditional baskets and other mementos to remember this once-in-a-lifetime trip. Christine Keel heads to shore. She was raised in Washington State. Her mom, Agnes Prosoff, was from Attu, but she died when Keel was 9. Keel says she grew up without any exposure to the culture. No subsistence, no traditional dance or dress, nothing. Now, she's the only one in her family to see where they come from.
And I'm bringing dirt back to my sisters. So they're going to be able to touch Attu too. And
Keel carries a big plastic bag that she's filling with sand, rocks, and other treasures of the past. As she goes, she's joined by Teresa Deal, the other descendant who grew up outside Alaska. While walking the beach, they start to unpack some of the complicated emotions this trip has brought up.
Christine, what do you think about being back here?
It made me cry because, you know, this was where my mother was born, and she's denied her life here, which would have been so much better than, you know, a different quality of what she would have gotten, you know, being in Washington. And
I agree, because the people that were born out here and got to stay out here, they have such a different culture, and it's like they're very proud of their culture also, whereas we just, you know, growing up as regular Americans.
It makes me angry because...
Right, because our lives were also stolen, not just their lives.
Very stolen, and I don't believe in racism or passing judgment, but it's been really hard to not be angry at the Japanese for taking her. They were just here minding their own business, living their lives.
Now, did your mom teach you that, anger at the Japanese, or just you?
No, I think it's just me. If she did teach it to me, I was too young to remember. Yeah. It's really hurtful. Yeah. And I know that they were just doing their job, but...
Yeah, because my mom, she taught me... We had to feel empathy for the Japanese internment because it was just wrong. You know, the Japanese internment, that was even more cruel, I think, than our parents as prisoners of war.
Both of them agree that hate isn't productive. Deal says she's made a conscious choice not to hate the Japanese. Instead, she feels sad for them. For Keel, she realizes that her mixed emotions stem from loss.
There's a million thoughts going through my mind because I've wanted to step foot on this island since my mother had died, and I really feel that she died as a result of the war. She became an alcoholic, she was an anorexic, and that ultimately took her life.
But spending time with other Attuans, Keel says, is exhilarating. Deal says it'll be hard to immerse herself in the culture living outside Alaska, but she's hoping to return for a regional culture camp and learn more about her heritage. On Attu, I'm Zoe Sobel.
The Unalaska Post Office has reinstated weekend package pickup. The window is now open Saturdays from noon until 4 o'clock. There is still no Saturday counter service, however, so patrons must visit the Dutch Harbor office to buy stamps or send packages. The Unalaska branch dropped Saturday service last August, attributing the cutback to reduced customer numbers. It's unclear why the post office has reopened package pickup now. Officials did not respond to requests for comments. Today is the filing deadline for Unalaskans who want to run for local office this fall. There will be 3 spots on that municipal ballot: City Council seats F and G, currently held by Alejandro Bongtungle and Sherry Coleman, as well as School Board seat A, currently held by Tammy Fowler Pound. Prospective candidates must file at City Hall by the end of day today. The clerk's office will be open until 5 o'clock this evening. We will bring you that final ballot during our next newscast, and the local election is slated for October 2nd. State election season is ramping up as well, and we're bringing you coverage of those races ahead of next week's primary election. Yesterday, we brought you a profile of independent Elise Galvin, who wants to challenge longtime incumbent Don Young for his seat in Congress. But first, she'll have to beat Dimitri Shane for the Democratic nomination. Shane is a father of six from Anchorage. KTOO's Jeremy Shea sat down with him to learn more about his platform.
Healthcare is bankrupting our entire state. Healthcare is going to be 30% of our state budget. And Medicare for All is a solution to this problem. So how can politicians continue to run and not talk about a solution like Medicare for All when our schools are being closed, when we're running out of money for public safety, when we don't have money for economic development? It's not right. I think someone should say something.
What's your Alaska story? How'd you end up in Alaska, and what's kept you here?
My mother and I immigrated from Russia when I was 12, and we came straight to Anchorage, Alaska, and I have lived in Alaska for, you know, over 20 years now. And it was actually just like the fall of Soviet Union when we immigrated. Yeah.
What high school did you end up going to?
I went to West Anchorage High School, and that's where I met my wife, Melissa. Okay. I met her in gym class.
What's your primary career been up to this point?
My education is in accounting, and I used to be CPA here in Alaska. And from there, I invented a planter box. And this invention took off, and I have an e-commerce company now, manufacturing, selling planter boxes all over the country.
For gardening? Like planter
boxes?
Yeah,
box, for
like
gardening.
That's done well for you, like just personally, financially?
Yeah, financially, that's, I mean, that I'm self-funding a large part of my campaign with earnings from my business.
Have you run for any past political positions like this?
No, I have not run for anything before.
Okay. And do you have any past political experience?
I was on the debate team in high school.
Okay. And why do you think you're a credible candidate for Congress?
I've grew up in Alaska, like I said, for over 20 years. And every 2 years, there's some kind of political race, especially a race against Don Young. And we get these politicians who speak in vague terms about what needs to be done. It's getting to the point where my generation of people are getting affected by this kind of vagueness and lack of courage to talk about solutions. So I believe I'm a credible candidate because I'm simply willing to talk about solutions that we need to implement. I was living in Bethel with my wife when she was in residency, and I stood there when Ted Stevens was visiting, and he gave a speech about how much work it was to build the first clinic there, how they had to fight for every dollar of funding. And that's what it was. He was fighting for funding. Ted Stevens did not believe in trickle-down theory. He believed in government solving problems, and we had a healthcare problem. He did his best to bring federal dollars to the state of Alaska, and he did a great service in providing better healthcare and establishing infrastructure in rural Alaska to provide better healthcare.
Do you have any kind of criminal history, any kind of things you want to just get out of the way? Yep.
I don't have any criminal history as an adult. I had a little rough childhood. I think when I was 14, I was arrested for shoplifting. Hmm. I was growing up very poor, and I think I was stealing a drill to help fix up a house we were living in.
And how did you get caught?
It was at Sears, and, I put something in my bag, and I was walking out, and I think a security guard approached me and just said, "What are you doing, young man?" Huh. Yeah. I think I'm really an example of how our system could be used to better teenagers. I was reformed by youth court, so it was great to go to youth court fundraiser and give a donation to kids who are running the program.
Okay. Anything else on that before we move on?
No, does this mean my career, political career?
Everyone's got something, right?
Yeah, I think that's my darker secret, probably.
What are some of the other major policy things that you want to get done if you're elected?
So these corporate tax cuts to the multinational corporations and the 1% of Americans are really reckless. They're really hurting our ability to invest in things like education and fixing our healthcare system. We need to have a better tax system that is more fair and appropriate, and that invests in the future of all Americans and invests in things like education, renewable energy, and tackles our healthcare crisis. That's where those resources should be going.
We've got a very colorful president in office right now. Yeah. What's your take on President Trump?
I think people like Donald Trump, and I think people like Don Young, to me, to my generation, they're one of the same. And I think they're part of the problem. They're bullies. They're obnoxious. they don't represent my generation of Alaskans. And I look forward to the day when we can move on from these people.
That was congressional candidate Dimitri Shane speaking with KTOO's Jeremy Shea. Shane's name will be on the Democratic ballot during the primary election on Tuesday. Unalaska's preschool is hosting an open house tomorrow. Parents are invited to tour classrooms and meet teachers ahead of the first day of school next week. The open house starts tomorrow evening at 6:30 at Eaglesview Elementary, Atchigalik. Also this weekend, the Heart of the Aleutians Festival. The annual summer celebration has been moved and shortened due to a forecasted storm. Organizers with the city's Department of Parks, Culture, and Recreation have canceled the cultural performances originally scheduled for tonight. Instead, the festival will start Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock with food, games, and music. The live concert by this year's visiting artist, pianist Jeremy Siskind, begins at 4 o'clock. All Heart of the Aleutians events will take place at the high school instead of Kelty Field. Organizers say they can't put up the usual tents because of the expected poor weather. Finally, restoration efforts will continue this weekend at the Bishop's House next to Unalaska's Holy Ascension Cathedral. The parish and nonprofit RASIA, dedicated to Russian Orthodox sacred sites in Alaska, are calling for volunteers to help. The group will be working this Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Interested volunteers should call Tara Bordakovsky at 907-276-2700 or Brandon McIntyre at 907-301-6064. Their efforts are part of a three-year project to renovate and preserve the church and nearby Bishop's House. Both are National Historic Landmarks, regarded as some of the oldest and most important examples of Russian Orthodox heritage in the state. Unalaskans can learn more at a community reception on Sunday. Those who can't volunteer are still welcome to join the talk, which will cover the history of the Bishop's House and the restoration project. It'll also include a tour. The reception starts Sunday night at 6 o'clock at the Bishop's House. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.